Welcome back to the Out of the Woods, your go-to podcast for threat hunting insights. I'm your host, Scott Poley.
And I am Tom Costura.
In this weekly segment, we break down the stories, tactics, and insights that matter most to threat hunters. So we're going to jump into the top threat hunting headlines for the week of June 9th, 2026. All right, Tom, what do you got for us this week?
All right, first one this week is from Trend Micro. It's titled "Old WinRAR Flaw Fuels Attacks on Ukraine: How Unmanaged Software Keeps the Door Open." So Trend Micro documented two separate Russia-aligned campaigns that were actively exploiting CVE-2025-8088, which is a WinRAR path traversal vulnerability. And they've been using it against Ukrainian organizations nearly a year and a half after a patch became available for this specific CVE. The activity really highlights how legacy software and patch management gaps continue to provide effective initial access opportunities. Most of what I'm going to be hitting here is stuff we already know, just a repeat of it, but I think it's important for a couple specific reasons, which I'll expand on as I go. The campaigns were attributed to Gamaradon and Pawnstorm, or APT28, Fancy Bear, one of the aliases, demonstrating that multiple Russian espionage groups independently found value in the same vulnerability for delivering malware and establishing persistence. The research reinforces a recurring lesson. The threat actors frequently continue to exploit vulnerabilities well after patches are released because, as we know far too well, Scott, vulnerable software remains widely deployed in a lot of environments and are easy targets. The flaws become a favored initial access vector for both espionage and criminal operations due to its ability to deliver payloads through seemingly benign archive files while leveraging that legitimate user interaction. So just kind of a rehash on this old CVE, it's a path traversal vulnerability in WinRAR that allows specially crafted archives to write files outside the intended extraction directory. So attackers can abuse this behavior to place malicious files in a location like the Windows startup folder and enable persistence and code execution together. So talking about the two sides of the two different campaigns, so Gamaradon weaponized the malicious archives to deliver a chain that involved an HTML application payload dubbed GammaFish, a DB script downloader dubbed GammaLoad, and then subsequently deploying both GammaSteel and GammaWorm malware. The malware focuses primarily on persistence, propagation, and data collection, and it was seen targeting specifically Ukraine. APT28 side, or Pawnstorm, leveraged the same WinRAR vulnerability to deliver espionage tooling against Ukraine government and defense-related organizations. And Trend also noted that the overlap with broader APT28 operations targeting critical infrastructure and their defense supply chains. Additionally, we also seen ADS abuse, or alternate data streams abuse, where attackers hid payloads within the NTFS ADS embedded in the RAR archives. They would leverage decoy documents like PDFs, government docs, military-themed content that would be presented to the victims while malicious files were written to the startup locations in the background. The big kind of key behavior things that we're seeing inside of this, as far as like when you want to consider hunting and so on, is in these particular instances, the startup folder was heavily leveraged, where it's obviously a common persistence point. It's one we talk about quite often. The execution chain that was seen, malicious archives are open, the WinRAR would extract that hidden payload. What you would see is typically a .lnk, .bat, .cmd, or a .hta file, and it would be written to the startup location, and then the payload would continue to execute on the next user logon. This technique provides persistence while reducing the reliance on more heavily monitored registry-based methods. Something, again, we echo all the time. We did see multiple malware families across the various campaigns and the various payloads that are distributed. I touched on GammaWorm and GammaSteel. We also seen the Async Rat, the XWorm, and NestPacker, as well as some other downloaders and other backdoors that were really kind of dependent on the objectives of these specific groups. So again, nothing overwhelmingly novel here, but I did think it was a good point to bring this up for a few reasons. One, using usage of old vulnerabilities that are unpatched isn't something that's crazy new to us, but it is something that I think we should echo to each other in this, on our side of the house, whenever we can, because a lot of these are always targeted by groups. So we have you know, clear evidence just in this one article where we're looking at multiple APT groups, nation state backed, leveraging this, using common behaviors like leveraging the startup folder after exploiting this vulnerability. And these are sophisticated, well-funded groups, right? So you're seeing these types of things happen continuously. This one, it shouldn't be just ignored. And we should, you know, really kind of focus on continuing to look at both, understanding, you know, kind of coming off of our last live podcast, Scott, understanding that know your environment. So understanding where you have some stuff that's not patched, because in some cases, and we both know this from experience, some cases patching isn't usually easy. It might be because of the environment it sits in, how sensitive the devices that are going to be patched are, different processes, controls, and policies that are in place. Potentially even compliance measures that block certain patch cycles, right? Understanding those things can help you get in front of stuff like this. And then, you know, kind of just stitching to that, understanding the tried and true behaviors, basic persistent stuff, stuff we see constantly leveraged. And you're seeing it again here, leveraged by a well-known APT group, leveraging a year plus old vulnerability and follow-on activity. You're seeing behaviors that we see all the time that I've seen for years. So things you can do to protect yourself, even if you can't patch, right? So I'll take a breath, Scott. Let's see what you've been.
Yeah. So I feel like even looking at this, this also could be like a result of just unmanaged software. Cause I feel like all those like free tools, something like WinRAR, where anybody can pull it down, like no one's really paying attention to what version people are running. And so you just run to the instance where someone needs something, and instead of having like a centrally managed, this is where you go to get things, people just have these floating versions around everywhere. So it could be like an unmanaged situation. But the one thing I like about vulnerabilities, especially like this, with some of the things, you know, that we see specifically, and that is, you know, the behaviors that follow vulnerabilities. Sometimes people get really caught up on like, this is a vulnerability, what are we going to do? But sometimes the vulnerability is really just going to enable the actor to do what they always do, right? It just becomes like the enablement of kind of the said behaviors. So, you know, dropping an LNK shortcut file in the startup directory, it's going to launch on, you know, a reboot or a startup command exe, which would then launch PowerShell. I mean, that's a pretty standard TTP as far as like persistence mechanism, execution mechanisms that we talk about kind of all the time. Startup folder is not always used, but the LNK execution for things, and then obviously the script interpreter chaining, which I call it, with the command prompt launching PowerShell. I mean, those are kind of like tried and true, right? So those things being consistent. It's also launching it in a hidden window for PowerShell. Sometimes people look for stuff like that. Execution bypass commands with PowerShell are seen. Now, looking at the raw commands, they do kind of break up the words a little different, where it's not just like a single letter or the full word. It's like part of the words for the arguments. So there's a little bit, I wouldn't call it obfuscation, but I would say it's more like defense bypass. So when people look for key terms, they may not trigger on them for like detection purposes, but you can see kind of what they're doing. And even that outer PowerShell spawns an inner PowerShell. So you have like command exe spawning PowerShell, which will then spawn PowerShell. So just that chain alone, you know, I would say is somewhat suspect. And the other thing that I don't think we've talked about a lot or before, but something to take note, you know, the git content command. Git content is interesting in PowerShell because you can use that to kind of also circumvent a lot of controls people put around PowerShell, because you just need basically a live local PowerShell instance running, and it can load content in, and it's not like it's running a script or doing things like that. So if you have specific controls around denying scripts from being executed or unsigned scripts or whatever. If someone was able to tell PowerShell to dispatch the contents and then run that, that too can be interesting depending on what they're grabbing. But in this case, the dash raw argument, it's almost like it's grabbing like binary content, right? I'm assuming, I didn't really look at the raw. I was going to look at that before, but I'm assuming that's what that is, which that in itself might be a good thing to look into. Is anything that fetches content in the PowerShell at the raw level, I would say would be kind of abnormal for how people would use PowerShell and get content. But that is a great precursor to wanting to load basically binary data into memory or execute it in some way where it's not just script text, so to speak. So something else that I thought was fairly interesting there. Obviously, they have some of the decoding and encoding. They do kind of have the blurb that's obfuscated in its weird way with, you know, random words and stuff. But yeah, all in all, like, I think the big takeaway here is, yeah, know what software you have. Be aware that even like small level software should still probably be managed if it's not. And if you're hunting for, you know, adversarial behaviors in general, there's a good chance even when vulnerabilities like this pop up or even future vulnerabilities, you at least kind of have that toolbox of things that may identify any kind of risk or exposure without actually knowing about the vulnerability itself. So yeah, it's kind of a cool article.
Yeah, good point too. I like the point on the software management side. It opened up the first idea I had in my brain, like, hey, you know, that's a good start for a little bit of an unstructured hump. Just go see what you got going on in your environment for WinRAR. You're going to learn a lot, right?
Right. Yeah, and that's usually, I think, some of the roads we go down when we look at weird executables and you find something and you realize it's like tied to some software that your users are using. You're like, oh, I didn't even know that software existed. And sometimes it's cool software because obviously that's why they're using it. And you might actually add that to your use of software at home. But in organization and things, you might be like, well, should we be using this? What are the risks? Do we even know about it? That kind of thing. So.
All right. What do you got next, Scott?
So I specifically grabbed this one because of you, but it's just to kind of put, more visibility. So, you know, I did a little talk, with a group of people in Chicago last week, and we talked about Team PCP and we talked about Shai-Lud and we talked about the CI/CD kind of compromise stuff. So we touched on a lot of things. And I like how before that talk, we've talked about things to look for. During that talk, I mentioned things that were in this as well. Before I saw it, they were tried, true, and then now this is here. But it's Aikido blog, and it's titled Red Hat NPM Packages Compromised to Spread a Credential Stealing Worm. Basically, the mini Shai-Hulud, which I believe was open sourced by Team PCP. But it's we're looking at Red Hat repos, we're looking at NPM, so then we're also looking at Node, and things that you've called out extensively is the bun execution environment. Same exact behavior. You've got bun that running index.js, and it's basically pulling down all these things that it needs to then kind of try to target and steal GitHub tokens, action runtime tokens, things to potentially further compromise of more things when it comes to CI/CD. And this started with, I think, a Red Hat developer credentials, you know, popped and made some pushes to a bunch of repos. Like, there's a lot of repos they touched from the Red Hat, so it's a long list. I would say there's probably at least 20, maybe 30 there. So it might be worth kind of checking out this article if you use Red Hat in your environment and you want to kind of be aware of things to look for. They did call that of all the types of attacks like this and previous ones, the other thing that's consistent, if you're actually looking at the package itself, something to kind of pay attention to is any pre-install context, because in the package when it runs, it has the scripts section, and then in that the pre-install, and that's where it has the node index.js. So that's just something where if you have no way to kind of combat this or need something simple to kind of put in place until you wrap your head around it, maybe there's a way where if there's any repos people want to use, you kind of just mandate that they have to look for what pre-installs are exists in the setup script associated with the package. So kind of pull it down independently, verify that, and then say, yeah, you can, you know, install this kind of thing. I think the biggest challenge, and maybe the developers don't have this problem because they're used to it, but I know when I've tried to be flexible with what environment I'm in, and instead of using the package manager to pull packages and install them for me, you know, to do it manually wasn't always clear or cut and dry. It could have just been my ignorance at that time. But that's something where if that is a hurdle or it's not clear and obvious, if you want to do something like what I described, looking for that pre-install, you probably also want to look at great instructions for how to manually pull down packages so that they can be reviewed, and then how to manually import or use those packages without having to use the package manager to do everything for you kind of like autonomously based on requests. So yeah, just kind of a call out to the things that you've been preaching, the things that we continuously see, why we do threat hunting, why we focus on specific niche behaviors so that these future attacks and all these things we keep seeing come up, we can say can be addressed. Even if it looks like it's rampant and crazy out there, there's still some things you can consistently do to help. So light at the end of the tunnel kind of thing. So yeah, I don't know. I know you've talked about this exhaustively, but I don't know if you have any adds to anything I had to
say. No, I'm happy to echo it again. I think it's important because we're seeing it's beyond a trend at this point. This is just going to be common space until we find solid ways of stopping it and they have to switch tactics. We're almost a year in, or, you know, getting close to a year into this, this kind of like focused and this kind of like where we're, or at least where I'm bucketing what we're seeing as a trend in the supply chain targeting and going after all these NPM packages and, all the different repos. And, you know, this is, not going to slow down. Team PCP, I don't expect to slow down. Doesn't seem like they would. If anything, they're ramping up. But I want to echo again beyond that. I think some of the clear indicators that we see routinely with these is, you know, with Team PCP, their tried and true behaviors are leveraging Node, leveraging Bun. But we also see these outside of these types of supply chains attacks. And I've actually had conversations with people, with folks out there doing this stuff. And I've asked, you know, are you considering Node? Are you looking at Bun runtime? And they're like, well, we don't use Node in our environment, might be an answer, right? As an example.
Yeah.
Well, there's many instances where we're seeing where they're pulling Node down if Node doesn't exist there. So if they land in a space, even with Team PCP, if they land in a space, they will go to node.js, node.js.org, right? They will pull Node down. Then they will do the thing. They will pull Bun runtime in. Then they will do the thing. Other groups beyond the supply chain targeters are picking up and using this behavior too, including various APT groups. We've seen this trend of this behavior continue to be leveraged, and it's leveraged for good reason. It really works. It obfuscates it. It hides what's happening. And the only real way to see what's going on in the background is to detect those weird process chains. Like, that's a key way, right? If Node's spawning weird things like script interpreters, if you see Node kicking off Bun, kicking off the script interpreter type of, you know, as one example, these are happening, not just at the supply chain attack level. So definitely, like, in my mind as a hunter, I'm looking at this as a big behavior, a big trending behavior. And I don't see it going away. If anything, it's going to be adopted more. So something you can do for your environment: how much Node do you have running? Where do you have Bun running? Just check the processes, get yourself established to that point, and you're going to put yourself in a really good position to defend against these types of things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't want to say like you're a cyber prophet, but if people do go back and listen to the very end of 2025, or maybe like the first things of 2026, you know, this is something that you were predicting would be a big avenue that people are going to be taking or attacking. And sure enough, it just doesn't seem to go away at this point. But I think it also
right, but I'm going to take a win.
But also, I think that highlights, like, you know, just us kind of keeping visibility on a weekly or somewhat weekly basis on what's going on helps you identify trends that I feel like you were calling that a lot of big vendors weren't stating, right? So if you rely on some other big vendor to tell you what's going to happen, sometimes just, you know, staying up on the beat yourself might add a little more insight because you pay attention to a lot more things, and novel things definitely stand out for sure.
I think it's critical for us, you know, not to sidebar too much on that topic, but it's critical for people in our industry. Like, it's very important to multi-source your intel to make sure that you're looking at many things. Don't rely on one. Don't rely on just two or three or four. Yeah. Go and look and see what's happening. Pick up on these trends. See how it's being leveraged. As hunters, we have to do this day in and day out, so it's normal for us. But anyone in cybersecurity, you'll find value by just spending time every week just checking out on different things. Don't wait for the big headline. Look at the articles that are falling below the headlines, because those are going to start giving you a lot more of that meat to seeing what's actually occurring, right?
Yeah, it's a good way to validate what you're doing too.
Mm-hmm. Very much so. All right.
All right.
The next one out of my pocket here. I have an article from Huntress. It's titled, let me make sure I read the title right so I didn't give it the wrong way. When moderate means sometimes. So Huntress disclosed an unpatched NTLM credential leak in the Windows search URI handler that can expose a victim's net NTLM v2 hash to an attacker controlled SMB server with nothing more than a click of a link. Microsoft reportedly declined to service the issue because it did not meet the company's severity threshold for a security update. The issue is very similar to CVE 2026-33-829, which is the Windows snipping tool NTLM leak that Microsoft patched early this year. Both vulnerabilities abuse those URI handlers that can be coerced into reaching attacker-controlled UNC paths. The attack does not require malware, macros, exploit code execution, or anything like that. Instead, Windows's normal SMB authentication behavior automatically attempts NTLM authentication when a crafted link causes the system to access a remote SMB share. So while the leak alone does not provide plain text credentials, those captured NTLM v2 hashes can be used in NTLM relay attacks or for authentication abuse and potentially credential cracking workflows depending on the environment. So some of the specs around this one, this specifically targets that Windows, the search colon URI handler in the comparison to the snipping tool, where that one actually targeted the ms-screen-sketch-colon-handler. This crafted URI can trigger Windows into attempting access to the attacker-controlled SMB location. So basically how this works, victim clicks a malicious link, Windows launches the search URI handler. The handler attempts to access the remote SMB resource. Windows will then automatically perform the NTLM authentication, and the attacker captures the resulting NTLM v2 challenge or response. No code execution required. Doesn't require any scripts kicking off, any macros, any downloaded malware, nothing like that. The authentication leak occurs before the user even receives an error message. Some of the potential follow-on activity that was noted or hinted at is, you know, that NTLM relay attack, which I had mentioned, SMB relays, privilege escalation opportunities where NTLM protections are weaker, credential cracking attempts, potentially against the hashes that are captured, and the attack delivery vectors, because it's a link, can kind of come from anywhere. Phishing, browser-delivered links, messaging platforms, right? Like, so if you can get a link served up through Teams or something like that. Documents or web pages that contain the link. And basically anywhere a link can live, this can be exploited. So some of the things to kind of track on this one and look at with this one, because it seems as if it will not be addressed and it's going to remain, you know, the vulnerability to this. And I think there's probably some underlying conversation about how well or easily this could be leveraged. But I'm going to sidestep that and just kind of talk about it as being a legitimate vulnerability you might want to care about. Hunting for any execution involving that search colon or search dash MS colon URI handler, you could potentially see it in command line, right? If something's being executed internal to the system, you can track it in web or proxy activity. If you can see URI telemetry. You can, even beyond that, looking for that executing out of weird or origins that would follow this attack flow, right? Like from your email, like from Outlook or from Teams, so I'm directly from your browser, maybe from an Office application, like a document. You can also track, and this is something I think in general, as hunters, we should care about and track is those communications, outbound communications to SMB, right? It's usually a pretty low hanging fruit to look for potentially malicious activity. I would imagine most workstations in a given environment aren't generally doing SMB connections in most environments, I would imagine anyway. Really, that's kind of the core focus of what this is. It's not something that's overwhelmingly critical or chaotic, but it is, I think, something that we should be aware of because, in particular, because of this little bit of like background resonance of Microsoft said this isn't important enough to patch, even though there was a very similar one that was patched just a few months ago. So this seems like it's going to remain open. I thought it was worth bringing to the table to talk about. There's definitely some things that you can do from a hunt and detection side for this. There are things you can look at, like I had already mentioned. But yeah, Scott, just wanted to bring this one out there because I think we should talk about it. And I'm curious what you think.
No, I think this is a good one because, I think why Microsoft's always on the fence for these types of vulnerabilities is because it's like a core feature of Windows in general. You're supposed to be able to connect to shares and you can provide UNC pass to items. But natively that's going to force you to authenticate. And if so, whatever you're trying to authenticate to is something kind of like a man in the middle where they're like scraping that off hash that's being passed, then that's been collected and can be leveraged by cracking it, or if they can replay it in some way, sure. But because it was not designed this way, there wasn't a lot of huge expectation early in Windows life to necessarily have like SMB shares, I think, all over the internet. It was supposed to be like internal, like you're basically setting up your Windows domain on-prem, kind of how we used to envision things. So basically what I'm trying to say is this functionality is kind of baked in a lot of places. There's been a lot of ways where attackers have tried to leverage different mechanisms within Windows software to get people to basically send out their NTLM hash. So I would assume that if you can provide a file path and put a UNC or there's a URI handler in any tool, it could be susceptible to something similar. It's just how you get someone to interact with it, for one. But then the other question that always comes to mind too is, can these same tools that can potentially, if they're basically passing off hashes to go fetch something or interact with something, does that mean they can also move data like payloads and be another way to fetch things as well, right? Where you don't really care about scraping the hash at this point. You're in the environment and now you want a crafty way that might be undetectable to say, I'm going to move now my final payload into the environment. So kind of two things I think to pay attention to with these types of attacks, not so much as the hash, but you know what data can be moved back or forth if that's possible. But I think the Huntress in their article, they did a good job calling out that, you know, ultimately you block SMB outbound to your network, or you don't have SMB callouts going to anything that's a non-private IP address. There's addressing that's pretty easy firewall rules on the host that you can enable. And if you're in an environment, easy to enable there as well. And if something's violating that, or able to track even logging off of that, that's kind of a good indicator of, okay, we're seeing SMB traffic, and can you tell what process potentially is executing, you know, telemetry wise, or the time analysis, not telemetry, time-based analysis, figure out what that is. You might be able to find maybe another avenue like this or something exactly like this, and so forth. So these attacks have been around a long time. Russia's notorious for finding ways to force people to off in some form or fashion, either by interacting with something, and sometimes they found vulnerabilities, which I think are more considered a vulnerability at that point, where they're not, you don't have to interact. I think that's obviously a much more glaring vulnerability when the user doesn't just have to have their endpoint on or reachable, and something can happen to force them. Because then it's not so much like a future, like it was probably designed. But yeah, that's just kind of my exhaustive take on the whole NTLM authentication expose hash type scenario. That's just a Windows thing. So I got to be aware of it.
Yeah. Yeah. And for you hunters out there, is another, you know, kind of unstructured target. And know your environment. Funny enough, it ties right there. SMB traffic. What's it doing in your network? Where's it going? In and out, north, south, east, west. Worth taking time and doing that analysis for sure.
Absolutely.
All right, Scott, what's last this week?
So last one is something I kind of picked up. It's a research that they did in the University of Toronto. An article I actually saw it in the Hacker News, but it's researchers build a self-replicating AI worm that operates entirely on local open weight models. So basically, from what I gathered looking at the research, is they had a, you know, their AI model on a machine running off of basically a single GPU. And they had it having access into like their lab environment that was like, I don't know if it was SSH or whatever, but basically was into Kali. So it kind of had some of the tool sets of Kali. As well as, you know, the standard base OS tools. And from there, it was supposed to be able to figure out how to basically laterally move. And so in the environment, I think there was like 30 hosts or 33 hosts. And they were deliberately vulnerable with something on them. But there was no drive for this model to sit there and specifically have this scripted, this is how you're going to attack. There was no like interacting with, you know, online LLMs to go back and forth with whatever. It just kind of had its way of just enumerating things, finding things, and then laterally moving. And so it identified, I think there was 15 isolated runs of what it laterally moved to, I believe. But it basically are trying to show also why single CVE patching kind of breaks down when malware can basically inspect a multitude of services. That was kind of part of the point. But on average, the worm identified 31.3 vulnerabilities. So I'm assuming they did multiple runs to kind of see what this looked like. And they gained elevated access on 23.1 hosts. Obviously, there's 0.1 because they're averaging the multiple runs. And 3/4 of the hosts were actively targeted. So not all of them were being targeted based on its own discovery. And then it replicated autonomously to about 20.4 of the hosts. So it's like 62% of the full network over a 7-day period. You know, I think what's interesting about this is something that is basically self-run and low power, for one. Also shows that some of the vulnerabilities, you know, were extreme vulnerabilities. Like you got like the print nightmare and stuff and dirty pipe or whatever. But then they have some blind SQL injection, JWT bypass, or like Redis escapes and stuff like that. So not all of them were like, I would say, severe vulnerabilities. Some of them were. But it just goes to show that maybe some of the how we manage applications, how we manage systems, the old tried and true, like only expose what needs to be exposed, make sure that what is exposed is fully patched, and things like that. It kind of just shows the significance of that. Now, granted, it would be really cool if they said, let's, you know, if they didn't have a vulnerable network and they were able to run something similar or like no known vulnerabilities, would this be able to achieve what it was trying to achieve at all? Because I believe it's trying to look for known vulnerabilities as part of its approach, which is similar to if you think of like the Hack the Box challenges, or you think about kind of like someone getting into red teaming, or that traditional, just penetration testing, as you know, the entry level, that's like the process, right? Oh, there's a host for an attack. Let's enumerate what we can. All right, well, what's running on there? Are there known vulnerabilities? Do I have an exploit as part of my library? And they're on Kali, so they might. Stuff like that. So I wouldn't say it's like high level attacking, but it just shows that maybe, I guess they're theorizing, if they had more AI power behind this, could this do more, right? It just shows that it's possible. But yeah, hygiene is gonna get people sooner than later, because in the past, sometimes you can get away with poor hygiene in an environment, but time was not necessarily against you, because there's so many things to attack. There's so many things going on. Everything can be exposed. I think where AI really impacts a lot of security professionals is that window of time that's a cushion. Now it's more of an accelerator. So you don't have the benefit of getting to it when you can. And it might be certain shops that have to manage stuff, might have to prioritize or run things differently. Or, I mean, I don't think AI is going to be in the business of patching things necessarily, but, you know, they talk about how, well, AI can cut down on the workforce. Well, maybe you need more workforce for management now to kind of combat this problem. I don't know. But either way, it's just a fascinating little bit of research, basically addressing what a lot of people were fearing, right? But I think what's great about this is it just shows, like most research does, the possibility, but it doesn't necessarily highlight that this is the doomsday. It just says, this is why it's important for us to do what we do. And all they did was AI was able to emulate a very low level attacker, if I had to put them in like a grade or range. So yeah, I don't know. When you saw this, kind of what was the things that stood out to you specifically?
I'm happy that this is being done. And I want to say that with some certain backing. It's very interesting, first off, that the whole worm, it basically is using just an open weight LLM to, running on a single GPU, and it generates attack logic as it flows, which makes sense. This is what I think, like you mentioned with the fear, this is what, you know, one of the things we kind of expected to come with the current technology under the air quotes AI bucket, right? It's not that it's going to do novel things. It's not that it's going to crack the system in certain ways. It's that there's enough data, we have enough technology for it to understand how to find vulnerabilities that have already been reported and or exploited, right? And then leverage them, right? It's not super hard to do that, even if you just leverage your own, you know, chat or Claude or a Gemini account, you can figure out how to go after a CVE pretty quickly, right? The thing that I like about this, and why I like that this research is being done, is that it does call to that shot that you mentioned of hygiene and making sure that that thing that we keep speaking about of knowing your environment doesn't go to the wayside. It has been for quite some time, and I assume that it's because of prevailing technology and things being stacked on top of things, and where, you know, companies are acquiring other companies and merging together, and all these systems just kind of find their way into this bit of a duct tape world, right? When you run a business, your primary goal is to make sure that the business function is there and that you're able to make money. Everything comes after that, generally, right? Or you're able to achieve your goal. Maybe your goal isn't make money. Maybe it's, you know, maybe you're in healthcare or something and your goal is to treat people, but you have a goal first, and then all of this stuff comes in the second part of it. And what I mean by that is stacking all these different applications on top of each other, stuff you've had that was used 10 years ago that's still living in your environment. Maybe it's attached to your gold image. Maybe there's applications that just got lost to the wayside because you have 100,000 devices in your environment. It is very complicated. And it takes a lot of attention to detail and a lot of really you just got to want to make sure you got to grasp heavily on your environment. If you can do that, the stuff that's going to occur by these finds, or let's say, you know, one of the worst case scenarios coming out of this, a bad actor can generate this specific type of worm or something like it, where they're going after these known CVEs and exploiting them and finding them and in mass, right? It's not just like one group targeting one thing. It's hitting you from 27 different angles.
Right.
If you know your environment and you got a good grasp on what's going on in your environment, you're going to be positioned to handle this. This isn't the sky's falling type of scenario in my mind, at least to me. This is just really understand what is happening in your environment. Make sure you're communicating across the areas in your environment, the different teams or different types of devices or things, and where traffic's happening, where things are going down, where stuff's being moved, what applications you have. You might not be able to get to a place where you have a full understanding of every application that's in your environment or every device that's sitting on your network, or you know, anything in between that. You might not get to that perfect place, but if you can just push towards that ceiling, you're going to position yourself to, this won't be a problem for you, is really what I'm saying. Does that make sense, Scott?
No, absolutely. And, you know, it goes even back to, I remember having conversations with like government run, like red teamers, right? And the conversation of 0 days was the topic. And you know, everyone assumes that all these nations or state kind of sponsored groups are sitting on 0 days, like it's part of their, you know, and the comment they made, they weren't going to like admit whether they had 0 days or not, right? Because that's probably sensitive information, but basically said that all the targeting that they've ever had to do, they've never needed to leverage a 0 day, which speaks to the same volume of how bad hygiene is already in general. That we always worry about that, oh, that 0 day, that could be super, super, super bad. Well, it can be, but people that are serious about attacking don't need them, at least not at this point. And the people that commonly use them, it's usually a time-based attack where if it's nation states using it, it's because they have an intended target and they plan on hitting it quick for whatever reason, right? So that escalates things where they don't have the time to go through the let's get the holes and, you know, move through whatever. Or criminal groups, right? They would love 0 days. They'll burn a 0 day in a second. If it gets them access to a bunch of things to make money immediately, because that's the whole point, they could care less what the operation looks like. They just want to make money and they want to get in and do what they do and that kind of thing. So 0 days to get discovered in that avenue, much more, I would say, scary or urgent, right? But the reality of the matter is if an environment is made up of multiple systems, multiple flavors of OSs, multiple applications, multiple softwares running, there's enough mesh there that attacks can get through. And then you put like business requirements on top of all of that. Things just have to be vulnerable in order for businesses to work, essentially, right? So I think it kind of speaks to how do we do business? How do we do hygiene? You know, if it gets us to a point where unless you're super secure, you can't do business, I mean, that'll change a lot of things, right? But it just speaks volumes to the reality of kind of the world we're in. I think what this research says, it's a good reflection of that, like a good look in the mirror, essentially, right? Yeah, I think research like this is good. I think it does highlight the right things. I don't think they're calling out like this is the most sophisticated thing and it's going to bring down the world. They're just saying it's this kind of stuff is possible, but they didn't do anything novel, right? Other than the AI running the show.
Yep. And I fully anticipate, at least if we've learned anything from our past, research like this comes out, we have this new tool and this new technology, eventually there's going to be a big headline of somebody using something like this that just did a whole lot of things. It's going to scare a lot of people, and we're going to have that conversation, and we could have it right now. And that's kind of the point. Like, you can get yourself ahead of this pretty easily right now. You just got to put the focus in.
I mean, if I had to make a prediction, this would be similar to like the Mirai botnet, where there's a thing out there that knows about these vulnerabilities and in really unsecured devices, right? Like Internet of Things. and it crawls and looks for these things and then compromises these things. And every once in a while it checks in, and as new vulnerabilities get known, they kind of get added to the list of how they do their crawl to then infect more things to create this giant botnet that can do denial of service and other types of things that are really painful to people. But I mean, imagine a smarter version of that, and imagine all those endpoints like Internet of Things that aren't secured that could just probably be much easier taken over with this process, because it gives a lot of, I don't want to say latitude, but it gives a lot of, like, you know, movement side to side, more so than a scripted approach, right? So that'll be interesting to see if that ever evolves. But yeah. So you got anything else?
No, not on this one. It was a lot for today, so hopefully it's all value for everyone.
Yeah, no,
some good heart nuggets in there, I think.
Yeah. Well, I guess with that, I want to thank everyone for joining our Out of the Woods Through Hunting podcast. Looking forward to syncing back up next time. And that will close out our top threat hunting headlines for the week of June 9th, 2026. Happy hunting.
Happy hunting, everyone.